Welcome to Albion Narrations. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. Today's narration will be a short study of Esau Edom in Jewry by C.F. Parker. The Old Testament is essentially the history of the people of Israel. It deals with the story of other peoples only insofar as they contributed to or directly impinged upon that of Israel herself, as in the case of the Adamic family and the Hebrews from whom she derived. But even here we can say that at most the barest outlines are given. We need merely consider how little we know of the personal or family history of Adam, Noah, Terah, Laban, besides a multitude of others of whom only the most brief genealogical details are given, to realise how small is the proportion of the Bible apportioned to those not of the nation of Israel herself, although they may have been closely related. Of Canaanites, Philistines, Hittites, and a host of others, not enough is given to reconstruct their history from the biblical record alone, although in certain cases, vital statements of national or tribal origins are contained in some most concise historical statement. Following the presentation of the families of Esau, two of whose wives were Hittite and a third Ishmaelite, a wealth of information is contained in the cryptic reference for Esau, which is Edom, from which we discern that, although comparatively little more is stated in the sacred record concerning the family of Esau, we may follow its story in secular history, which is much more abundant in records of the people of Edom, and know that Edom is Esau, whose half-Hittite descendants exerted a most profound influence upon the history of a certain portion of the people of Israel in the nation of the Jews. It will be well at this point to explain to those to whom it may seem strange not to refer to the nation of the Jews as more than a portion of the people of Israel, why they should be so described, for it is commonly held that the terms Israel and Jew are practically synonymous. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and the patriarchs in general are frequently called Jews, as also all the people of Israel. This practice is highly erroneous and has caused great confusion and misinterpretation of the history of Israel, which is not the same as that of the Jews. This statement may seem strange, so it will be well to examine the matter before proceeding further. The name of the Hebrews is accepted as being derived from that of Eber, an ancestor of Abraham. Thus, Abraham's whole immediate family, his father, his cousin Lot, from whom descended the Ammonites and Moabites, his offspring the Ishmaelites, his descendants from Keturah and the Israelites, are all termed Hebrews. The Israelites were thus only a part of the great Hebrew family. The name of Israel herself is that to which the name of Jacob was changed at Bethel. From that time forwards, his descendants were known as Israelites, and it is not correct to refer to any before the time he took the name of Israel in place of that of Jacob as an Israelite. To do so is to commit an anachronism. We might liken such an error to calling the parents of a man who had changed his name by deed poll by the new name, i.e. if Mr. Smith changed his name to Brown, it would be an error to refer to his father as Mr. Brown. The name of Israel was given to Jacob Israel's descendants and to aliens only after they had satisfied the requirements to attain citizenship within the nation as laid down in the Mosaic law. Jacob's 12 sons were Israelites. They also bore their own individual names, such as Reuben, Levi, Joseph, Benjamin, etc. Only one of them was called Judah. Each of the 12 sons became the father of a tribe bearing his name, excepting in the case of Joseph, whose two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, each became the father of a tribe bearing their respective names. There were thus 13 tribes in Israel, only one of which was named Judah. For an early period in the history of Israel, a division seems to have existed between the people. The tribe of Judah appears to have been almost an independent unit. David was king of Judah for 7 years and 6 months, but king of all Israel for 33 years and 3 months. Soon after the reign of Solomon, in the time of his son Rehoboam, a final split occurred, whereby 10 tribes established an independent kingdom with a capital at Samaria in the tribeship of Ephraim under the kingship of Jeroboam. The tribe of Judah became a separate kingdom with the tribe of Benjamin, which was given to it by the northern kingdom of Samaria. The tribe of Levi, being priests, was scattered throughout the 12 others. Thenceforth, until the time of the captivities, when both kingdoms were removed from their lands, these two monarchies existed as separate entities, the confederacy of the 10 tribes being known as the Kingdom or House of Israel, whilst that of Judah became known as that of the Kingdom or House of Judah. Admittedly, this is confusing, for the name Israel is thus applied A to the whole or part of the 13 tribes, and B to only the northern kingdom of the 10 tribes, or to part of it. One must carefully discern the manner in which the term is used when reading the Bible. Sometimes the Bible refers to Israel and Judah, in which case Israel means the people of the 10-tribed house, whilst Judah means those of the 2-tribed house composed of the tribes of Judah and Benjamin. The point I wish to emphasize is that a 10-tribed Israelite is never called by the name of Judah in the Bible. A Judahite, strictly speaking, is A, one of the tribe of Judah, or B, of the kingdom of Judah, which consisted of the tribes of Judah and Benjamin. The kingdom of Judah remained in the Holy Land for over a century after the kingdom of the 10 tribes had been broken up by the Assyrian kings. Judah remained until the year 584 BC, when Nebuchadnezzar took Jerusalem and deported its people and its king to Babylon. Josephus informs us that Jerusalem remained desolate for 70 years, until about 50,000 people, led by Ezra, Nehemiah, and Zerubbabel, returned to rebuild the ruined city and its temple. Those who returned were of the Babylonian captivity of the kingdom of Judah. They were not of the 10-tribed kingdom, which had been deported to Assyria. And they also numbered a minority of Levites, some of the house of David, and some who could not trace their genealogies. Josephus informs us of Cyrus's express permission granted to the Israelites to return to their own land, but states that the rulers of the 2 tribes of Judah and Benjamin, with the Levites and priests, went in haste to Jerusalem, yet did many of them stay at Babylon, as not willing to leave their possessions. He makes no mention of any of the 10 tribes returning to the Holy Land, and says, "Now the number of those that came out of captivity to Jerusalem were 42,462. This total, allowing for Josephus's express statement of about 525 expelled priests, is close to that of Ezra 2 and Nehemiah 7, which give 42,360 plus some 7,337 servants. These people, numbering just under 50,000, founded what is known in history as the Nation of the Jews. It was not a kingdom as the former House of Judah had been. In fact, it was never known as a house, but it was a nation, with its own country, people, constitution, and rulers. These rulers were high priests of the house of Aaron, with the exception that towards the end of the history of the Jewish nation, the Aaronic priests were displaced, and politically ambitious and evil men took their place. The territory of the house or kingdom of Judah was that of the tribes of Judah, Benjamin, and Simeon, whose people seem to have become dispersed in all Israel, according to Jewish belief. Its territory did not extend into that of the 10-tribed kingdom. The land occupied by the Jewish nation was somewhat larger than that of the kingdom of Judah, which was known as Judea, and included some of the land of the former 10-tribed kingdom of Israel. Nazareth, for instance, where our Lord's family resided, was on the border of Zebulon and Issachar, but in the time of the Jewish nation, it was in Judea. There was, besides the Jewish nation, a vast multitude of dispersed people of the former house of Judah who did not, like the 50,000, return to Palestine or constitute themselves into a nation. They remained subjects of the various nations in which they either remained or wandered. In numbers, they doubtless far exceeded those of the Jewish nation. Esther, Mordecai, Tobit, and a number of others mentioned in biblical and apocryphal literature belonged to what is known as the dispersion. Neither the dispersion nor the Jewish nation ever succeeded in reconstituting the former house of Judah. It was indeed Jeremiah's shattered potter's vessel, which could never be reformed. Unlike Israel, typified by the marred, soft and unfired clay which could be moulded again, the kingdom of Judah was broken forever. It is with the formation of the Jewish nation in Palestine that the name of Jew first appears. It seems to have been an abbreviation of the name of Judah, and it first appeared after the return from Babylon, according to Josephus, who, writing of the initial efforts to rebuild the temple in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah, says, "So the Jews prepared for the work, that is the name they are called by from the day that they came up from Babylon, which is taken from the tribe of Judah, which came first to these places, and thence both they and the country gained that appellation." Thus, in the days of the kingdom, the land and people had been known by the name of Judah. In the days of the nation under the high priesthood, the land became known as Judea, and the people as Jews. This is clearly outlined in an article in the Jewish Encyclopedia, from which the following extract has been taken. Jew, the word. Up to the 17th century, this word was spelled in Middle English in various ways. G-Y-U, G-I-U, G-Y-W, I-U, I-U-U, I-U-E, I-E-U, I-E-U-U, I-E-U-Z, I-W-E, I-O-W, I-E-W-E, I-E-U-E, I-U-E, I-E-W, J. E-W. All these forms were derived from the old French G-I-U, which was earlier written J-U-I-E-U, derived from the Latin accusative Judaeum, with the elision of the letter D. The English word is met with in the plural form as early as 1175 in the Lambert Homilies. In earlier English, the form I-U-D-E-A, derived from the place name Judea, is found in the Anglo-Saxon Gospels of about the year 1000. German Judeo, from which the modern German Jude is also derived. In the Old Testament, the term Jew appears to be applied to adherents of the worship of Yahweh as conducted at Jerusalem after the exile. It is thus used in the late book of Esther. And that's from the Jewish Encyclopedia, 1925 edition. It is important to bear in mind the fact that the 10 tribes did not return to Palestine and unite with the Jewish nation. Many have been under the impression that they did so, but historical evidence of such a fact is entirely lacking, and it is the agreed testimony from various Jewish sources that the 10 tribes have not united with Jewry. Josephus, in the time of Christ, wrote as follows. "And when these Jews had understood what piety the king had towards God, and what kindness he had for Esdras, they were all greatly pleased. Nay, many of them took their effects with them and came to Babylon, as very desirous of going down to Jerusalem. But then the entire body of the people of Israel remained in that country, wherefore there are but 2 tribes in Asia and Europe subject to the Romans, while the 10 tribes are beyond the Euphrates until now and are an immense multitude and not to be estimated by numbers." There is no evidence of the Ten Tribes having been united with the Jews since Josephus' day, and the Jews themselves are foremost in asserting this. In the words of Dr. A. Neubauer, "The captives of Israel exiled beyond the Euphrates did not return as a whole to Palestine along with their brethren, the captives of Judah. At least there is no mention made of this event in the documents at our disposal. In fact, the return of the Ten Tribes was one of the great promises of the prophets, and the advent of the Messiah is therefore necessarily identified with the epoch of their redemption." Dr. Neubauer appropriately headed his article, "Where Are the Ten Tribes?" and stated the traditional Jewish belief that they exist somewhere unknown, although he himself did not accept this view. He cited the Apocrypha, the New Testament, the Talmud, and other writings to prove that the hope of the return of the Ten Tribes has never ceased amongst the Jews in exile. This hope has been connected with every messianic rising. In the English translation of Professor H. Goeritz's History of the Jews, Jewish opinion concerning the completeness with which the Ten Tribes vanished from Ken is expressed. "The idols of Dan and Samaria and of other cities were taken to Nineveh, and the thousands of captives were scattered and settled in groups in thinly populated districts, the location of which is not definitely known, in Hala and Habor on the river Gozan, in the mountains of Medea and in Elam west of Persia. The house of Israel that had endured for 260 years under the rule of 20 kings vanished in one day, leaving no trace behind it, because it forsook its original elevating and invigorating teachings and followed the enervating vices connected with idolatry. What became of the Ten Tribes? Some believed they discovered them in the Far East, some in the Far West. They were deceivers and visionaries who claimed to be descendants of the lost tribes. Undoubtedly, the Ten Tribes were absorbed among the nations and disappeared. Some of them, husbandmen, vintagers, and shepherds, were allowed to remain in the land, and some of the nobles who lived on the border of Judah probably sought safety in that country." A concise statement of the official attitude of Orthodox Jewry on the question of the Ten Tribes is to be found in the answer of the late Chief Rabbi Dr. Hertz to the following questions asked by the late Captain Reverend Merton Smith in 1918. Number 1. Are the people known as the Jews throughout the world the descendants of Judah and Levi, or is there a known admixture of other tribes? Number 2. If so, in what proportion and what authority is there for saying so? Number 3. If not, what has become of the other tribes, and where, according to your knowledge, are they? Number 4. If that is unknown, where were they when Judah last knew of them? Does the Orthodox Judaism still look for the recovery of the 12 tribes at some future date? The Chief Rabbi's answer to these questions is to be seen in the accompanying reduced facsimile of his letter. To these expressions might be added the view of the late Dean Inge, who said, "The Assyrians deported most of the Ten Tribes in 720 BC. They never returned, and foreigners from the east were brought in to replace them. The Babylonians deported only the upper and middle classes, leaving the mainly Canaanite fellahin on the land." The Jewish Encyclopedia states the question rather nicely. "As a large number of prophecies relate to the return of Israel to the Holy Land, believers in the literal inspiration of the scriptures have always laboured under a difficulty in regard to the continued existence of the tribes of Israel, with the exception of those of Judah and Levi or Benjamin, which returned with Ezra and Nehemiah. If the ten tribes have disappeared, the literal fulfillment of the prophecies would be impossible. If they have not disappeared, obviously they must exist under a different name. The numerous attempts at identification that have been made constitute some of the most remarkable curiosities of literature." And then we have the answer from the Chief Rabbi, written in 1916. "Dear Sir, in reply to your letter of the 15th instant, I am desired by the Chief Rabbi to state: Number 1. The people known at present as Jews are descendants of the tribes of Judah and Benjamin, with a certain number of descendants of the tribe of Levi. Number 2. As far as is known, there is not any further admixture of other tribes. Number 3. The 10 tribes have been absorbed among the nations of the world. Number 4. We look forward to the gathering of all the tribes at some future day. Those who have read anything of the medieval Jewish travellers Eldad the Danite and Benjamin of Judea will know that they endeavoured to find the lost 10 tribes without success. In Cromwell's time, the learned Rabbi Manasseh ben Israel was yet another who endeavoured to trace the still lost 10 tribes and recorded his view that Columbus had discovered them in the North American Indians. Within recent years, Jewish writers have been unanimous in their testimony that the 10 tribes have not yet joined them. The series of articles by Dr. A. Neubauer in the Jewish Quarterly Review of 1888 is a learned exposition of Jewish attempts down through the ages to find the lost tribes. So complete has been their disappearance from the pages of history that Dr. Neubauer concludes that they are to be found nowhere, and he abandons the attempt to discover them. Historically, then, we have certain very clear outlines concerning the Israelitish origins of the Jewish nation. It was composed of parts of the tribes of Judah, Benjamin, Levi, and the House of David. Despite the Jews' admission that they do not represent the 10 tribes, it must be allowed that what appears to be an almost insignificant remnant of 10-tribed Israelites had either returned to Palestine or been left in the land from earlier days. In the New Testament, we read of Anna the prophetess of the tribe of Asher, who rejoiced in the coming of the Messiah. Any such remnants, however, have never been recognized by Jewish authorities as of anything more than the smallest numbers, insufficient to be considered representative of a tribal return. Articles in the National Message identifying the seed of Esau with modern Jewry have caused a certain amount of perplexity to those who have been accustomed to regard the Turk as the progeny of Jacob's twin brother. This latter identification is based upon no historical evidence. Our rendering of Ottoman is from Osman, which allows no philological connection with Tenan of Obadiah, who according to Genesis was the grandson of Esau. There is an abundance of evidence showing that the seed of Esau may safely be identified with modern Jewry. The Bible record indicates that from the earliest period in the history of Jerusalem, the population has been of an heterogeneous nature. Joshua records the failure of Judah to drive the Jebusites from Jerusalem, and that they were still there when the chronicler penned his record. The book of Judges records that the Jebusites remained among the people of Benjamin, in whose territory Jerusalem lay. Ezekiel, during the captivity period, rebuked the inhabitants of Jerusalem, accusing them of having both Amorite and Hittite parentage. Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites remained in the land in Solomon's time. In post-captivity times, the Jews continued to intermarry with these people, and the priesthood itself led the people astray by doing according to their abominations, even of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Jebusites, the Ammonites, the Moabites, the Egyptians, and the Amorites, for they have taken of their daughters for themselves and for their sons, so that the holy seed have mingled themselves with the people of those lands. That's a quote from Ezra. Throughout the Bible story runs a constant theme of an age-long struggle between Jacob and Esau. So strong is this theme that in effect it becomes almost a principle in itself. Even before the birth of these twins, we read of what is interpreted as being a prenatal struggle, eventually continued not only in the lives of the two sons in maturity, but also in their posterity through the ages. And in conclusion, the seed of Esau receives a thorough scorching, perhaps to the point of being entirely consumed at the hands of the house of Israel. In Obadiah, it says, The house of Jacob shall be a fire, and the house of Joseph a flame, and the house of Esau for stubble. It was by right of seniority that both the birthright and the blessing originally fell to Esau. As so frequently occurs in the history of patriarchal times, the heritage was withheld from the senior and passed to a junior brother. In this particular case, we are told that Esau despised his birthright and sold it for a mess of potage when he was weak through pangs of hunger. Jacob, who treasured the birthright, quickly seized his opportunity to acquire it, and cherishing also the blessing which accompanied it, saw fit to deprive his brother of that also by a piece of smart trickery. Having lost all, Esau repented in tears, but he and his progeny had lost both the birthright and the blessing forever. Esau proved to have been of wayward tendencies, and he disobeyed the injunctions not to marry among alien stock by taking Hittite wives to himself, which occasion caused grief of mind to his parents. And Rebekah in despair cried, "I am weary of my life because of the daughters of Heth. If Jacob takes a wife of the daughters of Heth such as these, what good shall my life do me?" Esau was also known as Edom, and settled in the vicinity of Mount Seir, where he became ancestor of the Edomites in Mount Seir. One branch of his progeny of a concubine Timnah of obscure origin was also known as the Amalekites, who tried to destroy Israel after the Exodus. The story of the half-Hittite descendants of Esau, the Edomites, is one of their continual hatred of and contention with Israel. Both Saul and David fought them, the latter bringing them under control. Following the division of Israel into two nations, the people of Seir allied themselves with Ammon and Moab and invaded Judah. They subsequently seized an opportunity to revolt against Jehoram, elected their own king, and thenceforth became independent. Amaziah fought a bloody encounter with them, slaying 10,000, with an equal number being dashed over the cliffs, but he failed to subject the nation. Edom took an active part against Judah in the capture of Jerusalem by Nebuchadnezzar, plundering the city, slaying its inhabitants, and crying out for the razing of the city. The persistent cruelties of Edom are denounced by the prophets Isaiah and Jeremiah. Josephus, the Jewish historian, gives a considerable amount of information about the continual hatred borne towards the people of Israel by the descendants of Esau, and of the ultimate fusion of this stock with the Jewish nation. This record is full of significance with respect to the history of the modern Jews, both by establishing some details of the complexities of their racial origin, and offering a possible explanation of their more radical and lawless elements and philosophy. Josephus states that Esau married two Hittite wives, and because of the displeasure this caused his parents, he effected a third union with a descendant of Ishmael by the name of Basemath. This authority tells us that after the death of Isaac, Esau departed from the city of Hebron and left it to his brother, and dwelt in Seir, and ruled over Edomia. And we'll leave that there for today and continue with Josephus on Esau Edom tomorrow.